listeners. It's Isabella, producer here at Impacting the Classroom. We have a special episode for you today, which was recorded live at Interact 2024 in San Diego, California. In today's episode, we get to hear from Matt Owens, who is one of the main authors of the new class implementation guide. If you've been following along this season, you've gotten to hear from a number of our partners who have shared their stories of class implementation, as well as tips for people who are new to implementing class or who may want to hear new perspectives. So in today's episode, Matt's going to go over why we created the guide, how to use it, and if you're listening along, we really hope that you check out the guide, which has been linked in the show notes. Please let us know what you think and if you found it helpful. And if you want to be featured on the podcast for how you implemented class, let us know by emailing us at podcast@teachstone.com. We hope you enjoy today's episode.
Hello, everyone. It's me, Marnetta Larimer, your host of Impacting the Classroom, and we are live at Interact 24. As always, we like to kick off the convo by asking what's happening in the classroom. Today, I'm being joined by my amazing coworker, Matt Owens. Matt, you want to introduce yourself to our audience?
Sure. My name is Matt Owens. I'm the Senior Director of Strategic Initiatives at TeachStone. I started at TeachStone about 10 years ago, and I had come from being an 8th grade writing teacher and then a 10th grade English teacher. I came on to TeachStone as an instructional designer, and now I get to work on fun projects like the implementation guide, which we're going to talk about today.
I know. I'm like so excited. Like, I've heard a lot of buzz about it, so I can't wait to talk more about it and then hear what our audience has to say about it or what questions they might have for you. If you've been tuning in to our episodes this season, we've talked a lot about the implementation of different programs using class from, you know, grassroots, like in the beginning, but also like some programs that have been using class for longer periods of time. So this ties into that. So again, great having you here, and I'm excited about this conversation.
You too.
So, let's start from the beginning. Like, this is maybe a first episode for someone. They're like, implementation guide, what are you talking about? What is an implementation guide?
Yeah, so it's essentially, and don't make fun of me, but it's a guide for you as you either plan or evaluate your current class implementation. And so the listeners of this podcast may have a variety of different roles. People in this room have a variety of different roles, ranging from educator to even like state level leaders. And this guide is to help you think about, how do you answer the question, what do I do with class? If you're already invested in the importance of interactions and you see class as a helpful tool to help us talk about interactions in a consistent way and notice them in a way that allows us to make better decisions, then this answers, well, how do you actually go about using that system? And it tries to make it really, really simple. So our particular guide is a website that only has 5 pages and it tells you to do 8 things. So a lot of work went into making it that short. The initial drafts were much longer, much more complicated. So hopefully it's something that makes your life easier if you're supporting a class implementation.
I love that. I'm trying to figure out, I don't go to bed thinking about these things, right? Who woke up and said, you know what, this would be a good idea? Like, so what made you think that this was something that we needed?
Well, I didn't come up with the idea. We had one. TeachStone was founded in 2008. There was an implementation guide that was published in 2009, another one that came out in 2014. And then we've gone 10 years with our guidance on class implementations really being distributed across really knowledgeable people like Marnetta, really knowledgeable people like those of you in the audience who have firsthand done the work of implementing class, really great resources like this podcast, great blogs, great products, but it's never, or for the last 10 years, it hasn't been consolidated in one place. So there's been a desire, both through requests from our partners in the field and just an interest internally at TeachStone of consolidating it into a single spot that predates me. I just was lucky enough to get asked to do it. So with a team at TeachStone and partners in the field, you know, we partnered and made it happen.
That's wonderful. How many of you have attended and like listened to some implementation discussions with Matt already during this time? So a couple of hands, I see that. I think what I, you know, we've been talking over this conference about like stories.
Yeah.
right? And like the importance of those stories. So through those stories and like the feedback that you've been getting, and hopefully that, you know, your people have, you know, contributed to, what did you learn?
Yeah, so much. I always learn so much at Interact. And so I think one thing I'll focus on, so this is not everything, is the incredible value of alignment. So class is often something that people fall in love with, and they want to put it at the heart of everything that they do and that their system does. And I think that in the strongest, most successful implementations, leaders are able to find ways to imbue everything that they do with focus on interactions and make that really practical for educators. So even if you just think about it from the perspective of what do we expect of our educators, you think of, okay, they need to be competent in how to use a curriculum. They need to understand what our approach to behavior management is in this particular setting. They need to understand our approach to inclusion. They need to know who to go to for what. They need to approach some kind of continuing education requirements. They need, you know, and the list goes on. And so to the extent that as leaders, we can support educators in seeing how all of these efforts can be aligned. I didn't even mention environment. How are you gonna set up your classroom? How does that support interactions? So I think one of the biggest things I've been learning, not just this week, but over the course of the last year, is how valuable it is when leaders find ways to align these expectations for educators so that when they do have their mandatory professional development, they see the ways in which it supports interactions, or when they, you know, have any new expectation. I think of it almost like as a manager. If you're a manager and someone's reporting to you, you don't just want to say, hey, can you do these seven things, but not show how they all right. are aligned to supporting your mission. And the educator's mission is about, you know, the children in their classroom. And the most proximate, most impactful thing that they do is interact with them, build those relationships. So to me, it's those stories of where sometimes the kind of boring technical work that happens with first starting with crosswalks and starting with, mm-hmm. you know, let's look at the calendar of the year and where are all the moments where we're frankly putting pressure on educators to do things in a different way or to do things more often. How can that all be wrapped up in this focus on giving children the interactions that mean the most to them? And so just being thoughtful about that, I think, are the stories that inspire me the most.
So during your time here, did anyone share some new stories with you as they were experiencing the implementation guide?
Yeah, so honestly, I was hoping for more, but there's so much that happens at Interact, I just have to honestly say, people are on the move. And so they're opening up the guide. And we did a little test of the guide in our session earlier today. Individuals had 5 minutes to look at it. That's not a lot of time. But they tended to find it valuable. So we rated a 4 out of 5 in terms of the average was, I agree, I've already found the guide valuable. But the stories take time. You know, so one of the things I'm interested in that I hope this podcast elicits is more stories of the ways in which the guidance that we provide at Teachstone actually shows up in your context and in different scenarios and in the face of different challenges. Because it's one thing to say we know implementations are more successful when blank is true. Mm-hmm. It's another thing to say, and here are the 3 things that make that difficult, and here are some of our partners who have overcome those challenges. So we have a story deficit right now.
Gotcha. Yeah. You can't be at a deficit. For those of you who attended a session earlier with Matt, like, what did you find valuable? Who would like to share what they found valuable with the implementation guide? Yes.
I really liked that it kind of went over the regional leaders, site leaders, so at different levels, so you could really use the guide to what you really need and not have to sift through everything to find it. So I really like it. And I love the links to all the resources, too.
Yes.
Click it and it's there.
Yes.
Wonderful. One-stop shop.
What's your name?
Paula.
Paula, thank you, Paula. I wanted to give you the shout out on the mic. But if you couldn't hear Paula, she just alluded to the fact that throughout the guide, we got feedback in December from our partners that it was sometimes difficult to understand which sections were most relevant to whom. So what we did is at the beginning of each of the sections, we have a table that really simply says, if you're working at the system level, here's how you should focus your attention during this section. If you're working regionally, here's how you should focus your attention. And if you're at the site level, with the understanding that some people have to take on multiple perspectives. You might be in a community-based organization outside the context of a class implementation where you are taking the initiative yourself. Where you have to think systematically about your community organization, and you serve some of the site level role also. So yeah, thank you. Yes. And yes, there's so many great links to resources in the guide.
Really trying to simplify that implementation process and really make class implementation accessible at all levels. Any other? Yes.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah, wonderful. That's wonderful feedback, right?
I didn't know this was going to be an advertisement for the guide. Thank you all. Yeah, there's one of the first things we encourage you to do if you're already implementing class is evaluate your implementation using a tool that's linked to on the very first page of the guide, where you just get your team together and you say, you know, are we already doing this or do we need to do this? And there's some guidance on how to go about that.
That's awesome. I mean, it was a lot of work, so I love that they're celebrating, you know, this work, right? Because it's doing what it's intended to do, and that's what we want. So, yes, a little bit of advertisement, but you know, it's fine. Back to stories. What were some of the common themes? You listed off a bunch of challenges, but what were some common themes that you were getting from the stories that you were being told?
Yeah, I think I go back to alignment. Well, I've already talked about that. Let me talk about something different. I think what I want to talk about was something unexpected when developing the guide, which was how important, and this is going to sound obvious, so I'm admitting this is kind of a miss for me in my thinking prior to building the guide, but how important the moment right before and right after a class observation is for an educator. Mm-hmm. It's almost... I mean, this is again, it's like I took for granted that educators were fully informed about why, when, and how they're going to be observed, and that they know what that means, and that they're getting feedback afterwards. So in the class, in the measure section of the guide, so it's organized around focusing on interactions, measuring interactions, and then using that measurement data to improve. In the measurement section, we really prioritize communicating with educators prior to their observation. And we provide a PDF called Class Measurement Overview for Educators, which you can use as a starting point, or if you need to, you can send it, because it does provide generic information, and then you can layer in more specifics about your particular setting and your particular class data protocol. And then what's really special is last year at Interact, I was in a session I was leading with my colleague, and someone said, we developed a protocol for sharing feedback with educators, and I really wish Cheechstone had one. And I said, I wish we did too. So now we do. It's called the CoLab protocol. It's linked to in the section of the guide about using class data to, sharing actionable data. And it's about having collaborative conversations with educators, which is, you know, what we want. We want them to be a participant in the conversation where they're learning about their scores or just how they performed if you're not sharing scores. So it's an acronym of a five-step process. And I think one theme is just how important the educator's experience of being evaluated, right? We can talk about class as this amazing, powerful thing, and we all get to be here at Interact, but most educators won't get to go to an event like this. And few of us have to get observed for 4 20-minute cycles where someone's looking at what we do, writing down what we say, how we move, their expressions on our face. It's a pretty important moment for them. And so to make sure that we're holding and honoring what they're doing and what's happening in that moment is really important. And so Some parts of the guide are about these really big ideas, like build and maintain your class implementation team. Like, it's practical, but it's also kind of a big theoretical thing. You never stop doing it, because as people turn over, you want to bring people back in. It's a little bit about the culture on your leadership team. And then there's other sections like these two, where just get these moments right. Mm-hmm. Like, it's really, and it seems small because it's so specific, but it's big in terms of how educators will go on to experience professional development, will go on to experience coaching. What will they say about their experience with class to other educators?
Right.
And so one big theme is, like, let's take care of the educators who take care of our kids by making sure that immediately before and after, they're getting the information that they need in the context of a supportive relationship and collaborative discussions. So at least 1 week prior to getting observed, make sure you send them a communication and they have a chance to ask questions. And then what we're challenging everyone to do is, within 2 weeks, make sure they have a collaborative conversation in which they get some feedback on their class scores or their class observation.
Yeah, I think that's so important, because, you know, there's a difference in creating buy-in that we're doing this together, as opposed to this is being done to you, right?
Yes.
And when you implement something like class, you know, and it feels punitive because you're just going in, I don't know what's happening, I don't even know what's expected, how am I supposed to be successful, right? And it's hard to shift that narrative, depending on how you begin the implementation, right?
Yep.
So if you want to have this wonderful, like, you know, because you've been in all the meetings, you've been, you know, courting, you know, your Teachstone rep, like, you have all of those resources, but our educators are missing those spaces. And so we have to court them too and massage them. Hey, this is what this is, right? This is what it looks like. This is the benefit. They have to know the why and really appreciate it. And they get there, but just think about how arduous that journey is if we don't set them up for that success.
Yep.
In the beginning. So, yeah. And it's really hard, because when you're doing formal observations, especially, and you're building that database, you don't get to talk to them, right? And so I'm always running out of the building saying, I can't tell you nothing, you know? Like, but, you know, but it's great to have some type of, because they want to know what
yes.
happened. And if we can't give feedback, tell them we're creating a baseline so we know where to start and build on, you know, that professional development that we need to move our systems forward. So, I'll keep on going. So that storytelling, from a leader perspective, why is that important?
That's a great question. I think at all levels of the system, like Bridget's presentation was a reminder of how stories are how we create and communicate meaning. So there's an opportunity, probably, or there is an opportunity, anytime you are communicating an expectation to educators or creating a space in which you want them to leave stuff at the door and focus on the professional learning that's about to happen, there's an opportunity to use story to contextualize whatever's about to happen and why they should draw their attention away from, you know, the million other things they probably have going on, what's waiting for them at home, you know, like just day-to-day tasks, never mind whatever you know, elevated stress that comes out of just doing the day-to-day work of being an educator. Like, everyone's cortisol levels, like, go up over the course of the day, as I understand it, just part of how we, like, wake up in the morning and, like, all that. But there's interesting research on when you're having effective interactions as measured by class as an educator, that increase in cortisol is moderated, it's lowered for educators and for children. But I think stories can help grab our attention in a way that telling someone why something's important doesn't always. I used to work on our content team, and we would pilot new programs in sites around our office in Virginia. And there was a scenario where we were piloting a new program, and the site leader was so invested in class and had a really great understanding of, like, why we do this and all that. But in the moment of getting her staff's attention, she said something along the lines of, hey, pay attention, our funding is that, like, it was just a very quick, like, you should pay attention because our funding is tied to this, which is a little short story, right, in a way. So it's not just about using stories, but it's about choosing the story that's most likely to connect to what people are motivated by, that gets away from some of the focus on negative consequences. Yeah.
Thank you for that. For those of you like in the audience, some of you said you've already started implementing class. When you looked at the implementation guide, did you look at it and say, oh, I missed this piece during my implementation? Anyone? Everybody's like, no.
They only had 5 minutes with it.
Right, they did. They're just like, no, we didn't have enough time with it, right? What pieces of the puzzle in your experience have leaders been missing?
Well, I think it varies. I think everything in the guide we have observed in the field done exceptionally well. What the guide does is it puts it all in one place for someone who's just getting started or who wants to evaluate. So I think it will vary from location to location. I think that sometimes it's hard to make the case for resourcing coaching, and there's a whole section in the guide around coaching. We know that evidence-based coaching changes teaching practice. And that can be a thing that's difficult to resource. So even individuals that know that, right, may not have the resources to make it happen. And then another thing is, I think investing all stakeholders is something that requires a level of intentionality.
Yeah.
And that intentionality requires time. So hopefully the guide makes that step easier insofar as it offers a list of benefits for children, educators, directors, regional leaders, site level leaders, and then funders and policymakers, just to show how a class implementation can support at all these different levels. But yeah, I think it varies, and I think that's why the evaluation tool is helpful, so that it can be, people can orient themselves to whichever part of the guide is most helpful for them.
One of the things I enjoyed about the guide, there are lots of things I liked, right? First of all, anytime you embed resources into a document and I don't have to go search in different places, that always makes my heart happy. But also, it's not just, you know, how to do it, but also, here are some challenges, some common challenges, right, and how to get around them. So let's talk about some of those. What are some of the challenges that come up when programs are trying to implement class or like scale class, right, and the impact on that quality?
Yeah, one thing we talk about is initiative fatigue and how there can be a perception, particularly early in implementations, that, oh, this is just another thing coming down the line. We got to get through this because something else will come in next year. I had a brief stint as an administrator, and I was getting trained on a tool in Tennessee, an observation tool for secondary. And I was told, as I went to the training by my other administrators, like, you need to learn how to do this, but don't get too attached, because there'll be something different in a year. And so there's this learned, kind of almost like, it totally makes sense, safety mechanism of, I'm not going to invest too much in something. And I think that the way around that is to focus on integrated implementations where your curricular PD includes considerations of, when implementing this curriculum, how can it support interactions? That your considerations of classroom setup at the beginning of the year account for how different classroom setup might make behavior management more challenging or easier, and how your setup of the classroom can support, as we heard this morning, children's sense of belonging in their space if they see themselves represented. So to the extent you can focus on integration, I think it communicates a level of thoughtfulness that this is an intentional implementation and it's sticking around. It's not just, you know, the next thing to precede your next thing, you know.
Right, I mean, because that makes a big deal. Because, I mean, my investment is going to be less if I know from top that this is not, you're not committed. But you're also showing me you're not committed to it, right? Like, yeah, that's a challenge. For those of you out in the audience, like, what are some challenges you've had in implementation? It's a safe space. Yes?
Sometimes.
Hold on.
I'm Tanya Thomas. And sometimes we have, with the staff turnover that we've had over the past year, training, getting that training in for people that just get hired. And so they're expected to do all this stuff with, you know, very little training.
Yep.
And turnover affects, like, the outcome, right?
You've
done all this investment. You've done the trainings. They've attended the classes, right? Like, you've done the feedback. You've done the coaching. And now you're starting over, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Yeah, I could see that as being really challenging. But I also want to know, what have you done to mitigate that challenge? Like,
well, we started doing an onboarding process where we're waiting for their background checks and all of that to come back, because they obviously can't be with children until everything's crossed and dotted and everything. So during that process, we call it onboarding. And so we're doing class training. We're doing, you know, all the other trainings Head Start has to have for people that first come on.
Wonderful. So you're taking that waiting period, right?
Yeah.
We're not just going to sit around and wait. Like, let's all get you prepared.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So that's what we've done.
Wonderful. Any other challenges with implementation? Thank you, Tanya. All right. Well, so
I actually want to talk about onboarding for a second, because you know you're not alone. It came up this morning, and it comes up in every like client partnership that we have, that there's high rates of turnover. And I think that having a really strong onboarding program is exactly right. We're working with one large client right now to adapt the walkthroughs that they have their new educators conduct, such that they're already beginning to use a class lens. They're not certified observers, but the rubric that they're given, we've worked with the client to modify such that it leverages the language of the Interactions Dimensions Guide. So they're already getting practice looking at, to what extent is the educator noticing emotional needs? That's a question that, at least when I was starting as an educator, I wasn't asked. So to ask questions that then prompt them to do the, you know, the effortful thinking and trying to notice, first of all, you need to notice that the child is exhibiting an emotional need. Mm-hmm. And then you're asking, did the educator notice it? And then the follow-up, of course, is to what extent did they respond? Was their response effective? And so now you've, through a series of three questions, begun to cultivate the class lens, as we would call it, but they don't need to know the language of class to answer those three questions. And then they can have a conversation. They do these in paired with a coach or a training and curriculum specialist. And then they have a conversation about what they saw in that classroom. And they're doing that after having gone through an introductory class training. And then that leads into, and so I think having flexible onboarding that doesn't rely on groups like cohorts, because, you know, people are coming in all the time, is really essential, particularly in this moment of so much turnover, so many new hires. Yeah.
Thank you so much for that. How do you hope that this implementation guide will change how leaders think about implementation?
Well, it's similar to your last question. I think it will change different people differently. Like, I don't know where they're starting, but I hope that it helps them feel less overwhelmed by the idea of a class implementation, and more like they know how to either initiate a new team focused on their implementation, even if it is just at their particular region or their particular site. So I hope they feel like their jobs are easier, and that something that maybe they've felt committed to and excited about, and it's easier to take some next steps around that. That's why the test earlier was just, you only have 5 minutes, because I know how busy people are.
Yeah.
That's why the guide is as short as it is. That's why it's organized the way it is. That's why it can get on your phone. So I just really hope it makes the work easier, because, you know, at TeachStone, everything we do is about interactions, and that's the heart of what you all do. But there's also so much else you're accountable to that we didn't want to do something that was overwhelming or challenging. Yeah.
Beautiful. So if someone started this podcast and they're like, I'm just going to skip to the end, what would be the one thing you'd want to leave everyone with?
The one thing. implement.teachstone.com. Just, honestly, the guide is the one thing. Like I was asked a question this morning I didn't know the answer to, but I knew it was in the guide. So I thought I knew the answer, but I wasn't sure. So I played dumb, and I was like, I don't know, let me check for you. And then it was in the guide, and so I was happy about that. But I really think, one, I'm gonna give a list. Like, this is our best effort to consolidate a lot of complex things for audiences that work across a lot of contexts. So please try it out. Please give us feedback. Please share your stories. Because the thing that the guide does not have today that it will have tomorrow, so it's 2024, April 3rd. If you're listening to this in the future, mm-hmm. maybe it does. But what we want to do is add in a really rich tapestry of stories and examples that very quickly communicate in this context or in this scenario, here's how this guidance was taken up effectively to remove any sense of this isn't for me. We really believe all this guidance. We've tested it with lots of different users who've said, yes, we can do this in our context. So we want to make it easier for people to see themselves in the guide and see that this can be applied creatively across all contexts.
Yeah. Wonderful.
Yeah.
All right. Does anyone have any questions for our guest here?
Or for Marnetta.
Oh, or for me?
The truth is most of them are here for you.
Whatever. Do you have any questions for Matt or myself? And it doesn't have to specifically be implementation.
Yeah, it can be anything.
I don't have a question.
My name is TJ Stewart. I don't have a question. I did write down, send Matt a story. I'm super interested and excited to look into the implementation guide. Because everything you're saying today was really resonating with me. Getting from like a compliance mindset more to
yes.
quality. And I think like for our implementation issue, that's where we were at, is that we were doing it. When you said it's tied to funding, that hit for me because
yeah.
that's what we've heard for years, especially in the Head Start world.
Right.
So really digging into, well, yes, but we really are doing this because this is the heart and soul of our program, right?
Right.
We really want to have high quality interactions with children. And that's where we are at right now in our conversation and our journey.
Yep.
So I'm really excited to have some additional resources to combat that a little bit. And yes, it's tied to that. However, that shouldn't be our go-to. Our go-to
right.
should be, this is what we want for children.
Yeah. Yes,
so,
and it's like the federal government is using it in a very particular way, right?
Right?
That serves a function. And we can use it to create a continuous improvement cycle right here.
Absolutely.
Yeah, and so their protocol is two cycles and a sampling of classrooms.
Mm-hmm.
If you really want to set it up such that every teacher is getting rich feedback, you want more cycles and you want to observe in every classroom. So
mm-hmm.
there's a way in a Head Start setting to have a really beautiful application of class
mm-hmm.
in addition to what Head Start, you know, federal monitoring is going to do. So I'm so happy that you feel that way.
Yeah, we're not all the way there yet,
yeah.
but we did get, now we're doing infant and toddler as well. So
we've
pushed it enough that they value it enough for us to have it for our infant and toddler because that's not required yet. So
yeah.
Wonderful, thank you. Any other questions? All right, thank you so much, Matt, for joining us. Let's give him a hand. All right, and that's a wrap.
Thank you to today's team. Marnetta Larimer is our host. Our producers are Isabella Henriksen and me, Megan Cornwell. Editing help is from Castos. You can find Impacting the Classroom on our website at teachstone.com/podcasts, where you can also listen to our other show, Teaching with Class. Impacting the Classroom is a Teachstone production.